The Black Scholars Podcast.
BlackScholarsPublishing.com.
That we should get our own. Once we have our own, we're respected for the fact that we can create our own. And that's equality right there.
Start a record label, Miss Fish just did it. Nylon, couple 5 minutes. Whoa, we are too hot in the business. About to make a movie independent. Need new trucks independent.
All right, Ryan Mitchell, welcome to the Black Scholars Podcast. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing fabulous. I am doing great. So, let's just get right to it. Durham. Am I pronouncing it correctly? I want to make sure.
Durham. Mm-hmm. Just Durham. Yep.
Just Durham. Durham yep. Public Schools. Mm-hmm. Is in the news. It's on social media. It's on YouTube. Everybody's mm-hmm. going crazy. Now, to clarify your particular position, you are a math teacher for Durham, correct?
Yes, I'm an eighth grade math teacher.
Okay, and you're also, are you the head of the teachers union or?
So no, I'm not the head. I am a organizer.
Okay, you're an organizer for the teachers union. And what is the name of the teachers union?
DAE, Durham Association of Educators.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Mm-hmm. So all over the news, all over YouTube, all over mm-hmm. social media, what is going on in Durham public schools right now?
Well, the simple answer is it's money. It is what it is. I think in a lot of ways, you kind of know what you're signing up for if you become an educator. You know that you're not going to get paid top dollar, but you feel like you're making a difference. And you expect to be paid a living wage. You expect to be paid on time. And you expect to be paid what you signed your contract for. And all of that has been taken away in this past couple months. We have 1,300, I think that's the official number, classified staff members, just anybody without a license to do their job, anybody who doesn't require a license to do their job. And what was told to them when they were hired was that they were going to get a certain amount. They were getting a specific pay raise of 4%, and they were going to be coming in at a certain step. And the district decided to not only take those steps away, they said that they would have to give the money back that they were overpaid for the past couple months. And this news was given to them maybe 2 or 3 weeks before the January check went out. So they said, not only will your January check be affected, you will also have to pay back the money that we overpaid you.
So when did classified staff start to receive this 4% increase? Was that the beginning of the school year? For 2023-2024?
Yes. So that was the beginning of this 2023 school year. That's when their contract for this year started with that 4% pay increase.
How did, and if I ask something you don't know just because it's like classified or you don't want to spill it or whatever the case, feel free to say, nope, I can't answer that. But okay. How did they decide at this 4% number for classified staff?
So I'm not fully sure, and I do know that there was a study that was done with outside CPAs, outside consultants, and they decided that that was the number that they came up with. I'm not really sure how the district came up with that number, but I know that the study with the Hill consultants influenced that.
So as I've been reading up on this, it looks like, and you know, of course, I'm looking from the outside in, I don't necessarily know who is to blame, but I see that the superintendent resigned, was it last week?
Yes.
And also, it looks like the financial officer who misreported how expensive it would be to give this 4% increase in wages is also out. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Both of those people have resigned. The CFO was earlier. He, as soon as the news broke, I believe like a week later, he had resigned. And the superintendent, yes, was last week. It doesn't look like, so based on the board meetings that we've been having, it doesn't look like anybody, any one person was to blame. It just really looks like an oversight. And I think in a lot of ways, just because the ball was dropped, both individuals felt like they should resign just because they affected so many lives and they affected so many people's pay. So in our mission overall in the district is not to accuse one person or say, like, it's your fault, you got to go, you're the bad person. But that decision was made, as far as the superintendent is concerned, that decision was made on his own volition. We didn't have any part in that. He just decided that, I guess, he wanted to resign based on what was going on.
So with him resigning along with the chief financial officer, do you just think it was the negative publicity, the social media outrage? Is it something specifically that's coming out of the community or even at specific schools that would kind of encourage them to resign?
I think overall it was just the negative publicity. It hit super hard. As soon as we found out, as soon as we got the emails, I think each classified staff got an email individually and they presented all their emails to the union. And they were putting it on social media, letting everybody know. And so it was just the outrage that was happening so quickly, that they just decided probably that they wanted to step down from their position because of those things.
And to clarify for the audience who hasn't been following this story, so the chief financial officer continuously reported that the increase for the district would only be about $10.8 million as far as this 4% raise. And actually, let me stop even providing context. Really, really quick, I have a question for you. Did teachers recently receive, or certified staff recently receive, a raise as well too?
Yes. So educators got a bonus, and they got two bonuses in the past couple of months. But the classified staff, they were on that 4% raise. That's what they started out with this year. Yeah. And then there was other district bonuses in between that. But that had nothing to do with like the overall pay schedule and the pay increase that they were supposed to have starting out.
Okay. So certified staff have received two bonuses, but that's completely separate from this 4% salary increase.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So back to providing context. So the chief financial officer reported that it was only $10.8 million to provide this 4% salary increase for all classified staff. That information, of course, was communicated to the superintendent. Superintendent communicates that to the board. The board approves the 4% raise. And then how did it come back around that it really was more than $10.8 million? I'm seeing different numbers, $19 million, $20 million, something in that range. Who initiated that, or was it the consulting company, or what happened?
So there's a lot of, confusion on that aspect. So what they're saying in board meetings is that, the consultants provided one number and they provided these options. They said, if you increase the pay by this much, if you give them these steps, this was what the salary would look like. And what's been communicated to us is that the CFO kind of ignored that or didn't calculate it correctly with the new budget. So like it came out at two different times. The Hill consultant said that this was the amount, and then the school budget came out, and then they figured out that those two numbers didn't work together. So it kind of just looks like they missed the mark. The communication was off, and they look like they just missed the mark, and somebody said one thing, somebody said another thing, and they never kind of reconciled and came back together and make sure they were concise and clear on one number. But it does look like it mounted to like 20 million versus the 10 million or the 10.8 that they initially thought it was.
And that's a huge difference, right? Yeah. Like, that's a huge difference. So one of the things I've seen, and please clarify, those steps. So just to be candid with you, like, I went to look at the salary schedule, and it looks like, you know, starting out, most people would be earning, I guess, anywhere from $2,500, $2,600 a month to $3,000 and more at the very, very high end. I think that was like $5,000, a little bit more than $5,000 a month. I didn't understand how to read the columns. What do those column headers mean? It was like 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, 63. What does that mean? If you know.
Yeah, let me see if I can pull that up real quick.
Because that was the confusing part to me. I'm like, okay, I get the years of experience, right? Like, obviously, if you have 5 years experience, 10 years experience. And actually, now that I'm thinking about the years of experience, was that also a part of this huge gap between the original number and the number that came out? Because I think the argument was, what qualifies as experience? Like, is it working for another state agency, another school, which would include another school district, versus, you know, if I'm a, I don't know, a bus driver, I probably have more experience outside of the school driving a vehicle of that size than I do, you know, just working for schools. So do you think that was a part of it too?
So yeah, definitely that was a part of it. What came out in the DAE asked for specifics about what the Hill study came up with, and like what was written in the study and what their results were. And part of that was asking like what qualifies as a step. And there are clear qualifications for steps for educators and for certified staff. There are no clear qualifiers for classified staff. And they said that it could be private sector work. It could also be state work, but there were no clear indicators as to what officially a step was. And so, and even if the steps were counted one-to-one, so 1 year private, 1 year with the school, or 1 year with another state and 1 year with the school. So there were no clear indicators about what steps were for classified staff. And so that was another one of the pitfalls. It's just like, let's get some clear answers about this before we can even move on, before we can even take some action. And so that wasn't explicitly stated. One person that I know just personally, she was a nurse for 35 years, and they started her at step 35 when she got here. And they were going to reduce her back to step zero because they said none of her work experience counted. And so, like, how are we making that determination? And so that was never explicitly stated within the study.
So let's talk about who this actually impacts. We're talking paraprofessionals or teaching assistants. We're talking bus drivers. Is cafeteria workers included in that?
Cafeteria workers, custodians.
Okay. Nurses? Nurses are included in that?
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are we missing anybody, or that pretty much covers?
I think that covers it. All support staff, nurses, anybody who, custodians, cafeteria workers, bus drivers, mechanics. Yeah. And that's mechanics. A big one right now. Our bus driver mechanics, because if they don't go to work, then our buses don't run.
And you said one that I totally forgot. And all educators, it's so easy for us to forget them when we just, you know, when we're having conversations like this. But working in a school district, working in a school, we should all realize how important the custodial staff actually is.
Yeah.
Like, they're game changers. Just the culture overall is somewhat, well, let me even remove that qualifier. It is defined by the custodial staff. Like, how those bathrooms are kept up, your classrooms, the cafeterias, the teacher lounges, like, all of that makes a huge difference. Even just walking in the hallways, everything needs to be orderly. It needs to be clean, especially in the age of COVID. We still have COVID. It's still around.
Yeah.
We depend on them for our health, you know, to a large extent. Being there so long, you know, every single day, putting in so many hours, even before school and after school.
Right.
So we need them. So shout out to all of the custodial workers out there. I hate that they're affected.
Right.
Speaking in terms of ethnicity and race, mm-hmm. based on, and how long have you been in this particular district?
So I started my teaching career in DPS. I have been here for, this will be my eighth year teaching.
Eighth year. Congratulations.
Yep, going into my ninth year. Yeah. Thank you. And I've worked in high school, middle school, and I've also worked in as an EC teacher. So yeah, been here for a little bit. but yeah, as far as like the demographics,
of classified staff, I'm curious. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it looks like all of our employees are, and they only qualified it by all employees. But just anecdotally, I can tell you that our support staff is mostly Black and Brown. It does account for about 35% of all of our staff in DPS in general. 35% of Black and Brown individuals are support staff and classified staff. I'm sorry, let me qualify that. It is 35% is Black and Brown across the district. That's all of our staff.
Sure.
But anecdotally, I'm sorry, most of our support staff, Black and Brown individuals, just from looking around, from what I see, they didn't qualify that on the actual breakdown.
And of course, and again, we're talking about cafeteria staff, teaching mm-hmm. assistants, paraprofessionals, custodial staff, mm-hmm. bus drivers, any type of assistants. Mm-hmm. And so are nurses on the same salary schedule as everyone else?
Yes, nurses are considered classified.
So a nurse is on the same salary schedule as someone custodial. Is that correct?
Yes, they should be. Yes.
Oh, wow.
I'm looking at this list, right? Yeah.
That's interesting.
They do have, and it looks like they start out at more experience, but they okay. should be on that same salary path or that same salary steps.
So do you guys, your group, your organization, do you guys have like a median or like a average, the average income combining everyone that is classified? Like, is there a certain range or amount? Are we looking at like $3,500 a month or what does your research show?
As far as, I think our numbers are only for all staff. We don't have okay. a median number for just classified.
Okay. For out of curiosity's sake, what's that number for all staff?
Say one more time. I'm sorry.
What's that number for all staff?
Step number?
Oh, not step number. The how much are they earning monthly?
Oh, for overall all staff, mm-hmm. it looks like the total amount is between 35 and 42,000. And I can do that monthly if you need me to.
No, that's fine. So 35 to 42,000 yeah. a year, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Are you guys on a 10 month scale or is it 12 month?
Used to be 12 month. Now it's 10 month.
Do you guys have an option to be paid during those summer months?
We used to. And then about 2 years ago, it came out in an email that they were taking that away. So we have to figure out how to save our own money for the summer.
Was there a reason why they took it away?
As far as the email is concerned, we got two emails about it. They did not give us a specific reason. They just gave us resources to put our money away for the summer. They didn't give us a specific reason for it.
And how long ago was that change?
This was about two or three years ago.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So again, just to paint a picture for the listeners, 35 to 42 grand a year, mm-hmm. Even though it's paid out over 10 months, is not a lot of money. Also, no. We have to consider that number is inflated by certified staff. Because certified mm-hmm. staff, we're including the educators, and I looked at the educators' salary scale for, you know, bachelor's degree only, master's degree, advanced mm-hmm. degree and doctorate degree. And, mm-hmm. you know, starting out, that looks like that could be anywhere from 43 to 48,000 all the way up to maybe 80,000. If, mm-hmm. if I think that was I'm going off of memory. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you can make a little bit more if you're national board certified. I noticed that. It looks like assistant principals are making more than teachers, but yes. It's not a huge discrepancy. I think the huge discrepancy that I noticed was the actual head principals mm-hmm. were making a significant amount more than everyone, right?
Right. Correct.
We will save that for a different episode. shout out to all the principals out there. You are important, but it shouldn't be a gap that big. But anyways, right. So that number, 35 to 42,000 that you gave us, is really inflated. So that just kind of proves just how important this 4% increase was. And then they started receiving it. And then they told them they have to pay it back. Is that correct?
So that was the initial email, yes. And so we had a couple of days of protest regarding that. And we actually went down to the board meeting, about 1,500 educators and support people and PTA members and family members went down to the board meeting, and they decided to take that away. And so they don't have to pay the money back, but they weren't willing to restore the steps. And so that's what we're still fighting for now. Because that is a significant drop. Another person that I know personally, her actual monthly income is reduced by $900.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah. She's one of our finance people in the actual school building, mm-hmm. but $900, people made a lot of life decisions based on the amount of money that they thought they were going to receive and for them to take it back. And then also people decided to choose this job over the other jobs. Mm-hmm. because of the amount that they thought they were going to receive. And so you're taking away people's options, really.
Because mm-hmm. they've probably already passed on particular opportunities mm-hmm. to work for the school district and thinking that they were receiving a certain amount. And then now you've changed that. I couldn't imagine. So let's talk a little bit about the psychology behind all of this. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, obviously you get a chance to work with classified staff and know them on a personal basis. What's mm-hmm. the psychology behind this? Because even though we can all obviously agree to this is wrong what the district has done, somebody dropped the ball, somebody made a mistake, but this mm-hmm. is wrong. I'd have to imagine like their families are telling them not to strike. Maybe their friends and colleagues are telling them not to strike. I guess before I even ask this next question, are we sure, is it 100% of classified staff? Are they on strike or is it just a huge majority of them?
So right now, when we do a day of protest, we like to avoid strike. But when we do a day of protest, we try to get the entire district involved. So it's not just classified staff because there is power in numbers. And so what we do is we go through the building, we poll everyone to make sure that we're able to do a day of protest. We're seeing what that looks like. Is that picketing? Is that staying out? So it looks like right now that majority of the classified staff and majority of the certified staff are also with them. So over the district, 75% of all staff is at least willing to do a day of protest. And so we're just working those days in, and I can't really talk too much about that, but like how we're rolling that out. But as long as we have the numbers, we get on our emails and do our text message and say, okay, today's the day, we're not going in. And so we're trying to do it collectively so that everybody is on board, because the more you have, the more it impacts the district.
I love the solidarity of that. Mm-hmm. It's not just classified staff by itself, but it's certified mm-hmm. staff saying, hey, we're all educators. We're all here to reach our objectives, our vision, our mission. We're trying to educate this youth. We're trying to help these kids be successful. And like, we're not going to leave you out to dry. We're going to do this mm-hmm. together. So 75% is in support of, as you say, this protest. So let's talk about the psychology of that. I'm sure there probably are some professionals in this district who are scared to even protest mm-hmm. because maybe they fear I'm putting my career at risk. And again, we all can agree the consensus is this is wrong, what the district has done, whether they intended to or it was just a mistake, but this is wrong. What are some of the conversations, or what are some of the things you're seeing behind the scenes as far as how are people able to overcome their fears and say, I'm going to protest for this because I believe in this? Especially the certified staff who it might not directly be impacting, but of course, everyone's impacted.
Yeah. And that's a big challenge. And as an organizer, we deal with that almost daily. We have to pull every single person individually. And we hear the stories and we hear the issues that people have. And some people do get paid hourly and some people are in fear of, well, I'm barely making it as it is. Mm-hmm. They're already taking away this money. At least I can just go to work and just get what they are giving me. And so we're trying to have those conversations where the biggest thing is for the union is it's power in numbers. So if you are agreeing to take a day off, we are here to back you. And we're doing this together because it's solidarity. It's collective effort. We support you. We can't run a school without you. Like, that's the whole purpose of having the two distinctions of classified and certified staff, because we need them to run the building. And so we're here with you and we understand the fear, but we can't let that fear get in the way of this is wrong. And they're doing stuff intentionally against us. They're attacking us right now. And they're just hoping that we roll over and take it. And we're not. And so that's the biggest thing. If we're trying to like get out of that fear mindset, you have 75%, there's over 5,000 people in the district. 75% of those workers are willing to walk out with you. Will you do it today? And so we're getting those people and we're trying to get those polls and those numbers up so that we can effectively do what we need to do. If we're out for a day, the district has to make a move because kids aren't going to school. Kids aren't learning. And so we have to figure out a way to make that happen and getting everybody on board. And it is a challenge trying to get through that fear aspect of it, where it is scary. It is scary. I have to take a day. I have to put in a day and lose maybe a day of pay. So what does that look like for me going forward? So it is a constant conversation, and that's something that we battle every day as organizers, but we're trying to get through that so that we can move on to the next thing and get the district to essentially reach our demands.
And how long has the protest been occurring?
Since we heard about the issues with pay and since we got all the emails, it's been about a month. And we're doing little things. Again, don't want to reveal too much, but we're doing little things to kind of, you know, show the district what we have. And every week it's something else. We might do pickets. We might do protests. We might walk in, do walk-ins. We might do walk-outs. We might do sick-outs. But it's been about a month so far that we've been doing little things to just kind of press the district a little more. And the biggest thing is just staying relevant. So you heard about this. The media is still on this, and it's been a month. We don't want to roll over. We don't want to let it just go. Because once it gets behind, once it's not in the media anymore, then people don't care. And sure, we don't have the power that we need. So we need that exposure. And so we're trying to do those little things every week so that the district knows that we're still here and we still need you to fix the problem that you created.
And are classified staff still being paid along with certified staff that are willingly participating in, you know, the different types of protests that you guys are executing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're still getting paid. It looks like, for the most part, the district is and the board has been very supportive. So as soon as we have a day out or a sick out, or if we have a picket or something of that nature, the district will just go ahead and close schools. And it doesn't count against us for a day. So as of right now, people are still getting paid. We just need the overall issue with pay to be fixed so that we don't have to deal with the next February check or the March check or whatever. With those reduced steps.
In the case that the district decides not to be, and please clarify this if I'm getting this wrong, but in the case that the district decides not to be so supportive and they start to be a little bit more aggressive on the negative side and they stop paying, is there any plan in motion in case that happens to make sure that these professionals are still able to, you know, take care of themselves and their families?
So yes, the union works very hard with, like, with our lawyers and with our different organizations coming up with ways and resources that people are still supported. We hope, we again hope it never gets to that point, but we do have backing. We do have a coverage for that if it gets to that point.
Beautiful. I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. Besides the 4% increase, is there anything non-monetary that you guys are looking at as a potential goal or objective at the outcome of all of this?
Yeah, definitely. Excuse me. Our overall demand is meet and confer. We're trying to get a seat at the table so that when decisions are made, we have that information ahead of time. It would have rolled over a lot better if we knew back in October of 2022 that they were even doing a study and these were possible ramifications from the study. Or back in February 2023, when the CFL knew that the money was not the right amount and that the budget, we didn't have the budget to cover it, but they let it go for an entire year before they let us know. And then all of a sudden, your January checks will be affected. Also, you have to pay back the money we overpaid you. So having a seat at the table, being able to meet and confer, we are a non-union state, so we can't have collective bargaining, but we can do what's called meet and confer. And having a seat at the table to be able to talk to the district and talk to the board members about decisions that are being made. The fact is that all these decisions are made without teacher input, without educator input. And we know what's best for our buildings. We know what's best for our students. We know what works for us. But we have these closed session meetings and the board goes in and they talk about all these things and they just push out something that doesn't really help us. And so we're trying to get a seat at the table so that we know exactly what's going on. We know how to get this information to everybody and see how it'll be affected so that people can make decisions with their lives. If this is something that the district wanted to do, completely fine, but I could have found another job a year ago when you were deciding all this. And right. So just having that knowledge beforehand and also having a voice to say that that's not going to work for 90% of people in the district, 90% of educators, 90% of the classified staff. Let's find something else to do. So that's our overall demand, just getting meet and confer. And then also restoring steps. If you sign a contract and you say that I want to work here because I'm getting paid this amount and I'm starting at this amount, you can't take that back because we signed a contract to pay for that amount. And that's how much that I've decided that was good for me and that was going to work for my lifestyle. So to take that back is almost criminal. Like, I've made decisions based on this. So those are the big two demands right now, restoring the steps that were taken away and then just having a seat at the table so that we know exactly what's going on.
Yeah. I hope you guys are successful in everything that you are doing. Last question for you, Ryan. Mm-hmm. For educators who are listening to this episode and they might be having some, you know, quiet conversations right now with their association, with their union about, you know, their pay, the salary scale, something that they are not satisfied with and they know they deserve more. Mm-hmm. What advice as an organizer of these protests, what advice would you have for them in the early detection of problems with the district? How should they go about hopefully resolving this in an amicable way?
Yeah. The biggest thing is joining the local union. Just being a part of it, being in the mix, knowing what's coming out. We get the information as soon as the board gets it. So we know what's going on. And then we can make decisions based on that. And when we have that power in number, that power in numbers, we can do things that make the district move. And so with more people, with that 51%, however many we need for the district, we can make the board make decisions for us because they have to hear our voices. And if we keep our heads down and we don't support and we don't get a part of it and we don't get active and we don't have our voices heard, then nothing changes. And education has been in a downward spiral for a very long time. And that's why we're trying to build the union so that they have to listen to us and they have to meet our demands.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And again, I hope everything works out for you guys in your favor, your classified mm-hmm. staff, even certified staff. I just hope that this works out, you know, best possible case. because I know it's going on in other cities, locales, states, even if it's not official yet. I mean, we've seen it before in recent years, even during COVID. So I think it's something that will continue. And I hope that districts are paying attention and making the best decisions with educators at the forefront, because ultimately we are your, you know, you need us for us to serve the community, for us to serve the student. So take care of us and we will take care of the students. You know, it's just a, it's an easy system, but I digress.
We just want to do our job. That's it.
Exactly. Yeah. We just want to do what we are trying to do. Many of us have a purpose and passion to help these kids and help these families, and just equipped us so we can be our best to do the work that we do, because it's not easy work at all.
Right.
So, yeah, just make sure, take care of your people and they'll take care of your target demographic, which is these students and families. So
you're right.
Well said. Well said. Any last words for Black educators out there or educators in general?
Just let your voice be heard. You have a voice. You know the common sense solutions to the issues that we have. The district just needs to hear us. And the only way to do that is with numbers. So just let your voice be heard. Don't just sit there and keep your head down. There are changes happening. And you just got to be a part of it.
Absolutely. Well said.
Thank you for listening to the Black Scholars Podcast. For more information, sometimes go to blackscholarspublishing.com.
You just gotta
go.
You will never know what you could ever be. If you never try, you will never see. Stayed in Africa, we ain't never leave. So the one don't sleep.